Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Craig Burley. Real Madrid back in action after the World Cup, and they go top of the table after a 2-0 victory over Valladolid. They were made to work hard for it, though, and a controversial penalty would really change the game in the 83rd minute. Benzema converting what was accused of being a handball in the box. As a result, Leon sent off for swearing at the official. Benzema then getting his second to see Real Madrid take all 3 points. That puts them, for the moment, 1 point clear of Barca, who take on Espanyol on Saturday. Well, let's welcome in, shall we? Luis Suarez is with us, as is Sid Lowe.
Luis Suarez.
Luis Suarez. I do that far too much. All the time. Hey. Luis Garcia is with us, as is Sid Lowe.
Hey, what? Let's just
I call him Luis Suarez a lot.
You've had a really busy Christmas and New Year.
Luis, let's get to the crunch of it. Was it a penalty for you?
I think I was going to call more the first chance, the first challenge, than the second one. The second one is a little bit harsh, a little bit soft. Once again, you can see that the defender kind of opened a little bit the arm, but it's pushed a little bit, so that arm even go higher to receive the ball. Doesn't even know where the ball is. I understand that it's far away from his body, so I understand that the referee decided to call it and pointed the spot, but definitely for me, I think it's a very soft. You can see right there a little bit. In this replay, it's very difficult to see. He waits and for the call from the VAR, but there, doesn't even see the ball. He's not trying to make himself big. He's just in the air, so you cannot control your arms in the air. You cannot push your hand in the air when you don't even know where the ball is. So I think it's a little bit harsh, this challenge, and well, I wouldn't call it, but that's the way that today happened for the referee.
Soft penalty, Sid?
For me, both of the penalties are. The one that wasn't given, the one that is given. They both are. That said, I'm perfectly prepared to have a refereeing expert say to me, this is why it is, or this is why it isn't, and we just have to accept it, because these days I genuinely do sometimes feel to myself, I don't know what a penalty is anymore, certainly not for handballs, but for me, both of those probably were.
There's one exactly pretty much the same. We talked about it a week or so ago. Lucas Digne for Aston Villa in a Premier League match this season. Very much the same scenario. The ball, he was, again, jumping and leaning back the way. And I think if you watch this clip as well, not only is the defender sort of jumping back the way because that's his natural position, but Benzema has some contact on him, just a little bit. So that's already knocking him. And you know, you just can't... This is what drives me crazy with referees. You just cannot do that with your arms at your side.
Yeah.
You just can't. And the Lucas Digne one wasn't given, same as this. Ref goes to the monitor. He gave it, the same as this. And then the Premier League, or the PGMOL, the match officials, said it was wrong. It was a wrong call, and the referee's on-field decision should have stood. And I feel here, the referee's on-field decision at the time, which was no penalty, I thought that should have called. And look, I know it was 2-0, but once this happened, it changed the game. Yep. Benzema scores the penalty.
Yes.
Sergio Leon loses the plot, gets himself sent off for a second yellow for vehemently having a pop at the fourth official. So everybody kind of had lost their way a little bit. But yeah, I agree with Sid. It's just sometimes we talk about these handballs, and I don't think referees, even FIFA qualified referees, can give us a definitive answer and where exactly this law stands.
Away from that penalty, Luis, I thought Real Madrid looked a bit rusty today.
Yeah, very much. Very plain, no intensity at all. I think the midfield was a little bit lost with Ceballos, with Kroos in a holding midfield. That is his position, but he was overrun at some moments. We didn't see the best of Valverde or Asensio. Benitez was the only main threat in most of the times. Benzema, until that challenge on the penalty and right after the second goal, we didn't see much about him. The ball were not arriving in right conditions to the player that looks still out of fitness. He's going to need another 2 or 3 games to see the best of Benzema once again. But definitely it wasn't the best performance of Real Madrid. Valladolid believed that they could get something from this game and start controlling most of the parts during the game, even had the best chances, in my opinion. It was Courtois, the one who denied them. And it was Real Madrid who, at the end, because of the quality and the talent that they got up front, were more clinical and got the 3 points.
Two goals for Benzema, Sid, obviously with a point to prove given what happened in the World Cup. We haven't spoken to you for a couple of months. What has been the main narrative surrounding his return from the World Cup to the Real Madrid squad, given the reports that are coming out saying that, well, actually, he could have stayed and played from the last 16?
Yeah, I mean, given that the focus of this is seen sort of from Benzema's point of view, I think, in Spain, that I think there's a very clear sense that he was denied the opportunity to have been part of a team that could have won the World Cup. And then, of course, that gets extended into analysis that says, had he been there, maybe they would have won the World Cup in the final, because he'd been able to play from the kind of the quarterfinals or semi-final level onwards. He would certainly have been able to be on the bench for the final, and that maybe that would have changed things. And it feels kind of sad, I think, from a Spanish point of view, given how good this last season's been, given the fact that, of course, he won the Ballon d'Or, that he's kind of come out of the shadow of that auxiliary role that he played for so long. And I think more than anything else, there's a sense of kind of disappointment with the way that this was managed. Now, obviously, that's from a position of not knowing exactly what happened between him and Deschamps, what happened between him and the French Football Federation, and what the reasons were for the obvious reluctance to keep him as part of the setup, and what may or may not have been said between him and Deschamps in the build-up to that sort of last two weeks of the World Cup. But yeah, fundamentally, the response to this in Spain has been of kind of, what a pity. You know, all of these years of Benzema kind of trying to prove himself, gets the season that looks like it's perfect, and then it ends in a way that's been deeply, deeply disappointing for him.
Meanwhile, Sid, away from the game, obviously reports that Real Madrid are ready to pay up to $100 million for Jude Bellingham. What can you tell us about this?
Well, it's essentially a report that was covered today by Rodrigo Faiz and Alex Kirkland for ESPN. And what they've said is what I think some of the English clubs have believed for a while, which is that Real Madrid feel they're in pole position, that Real Madrid feel they're in the best position of the clubs chasing Bellingham, that his inclination is to go to Spain rather than to head back to the Premier League, and that they're optimistic. Now, obviously, we always have to be careful about these kind of stories, because clubs sometimes are wrong about their optimism. Clubs sometimes are wrong about their pessimism as well, when they believe there's a player that he's inevitably going to go somewhere else. But certainly, the feeling within the game involving Real Madrid, involving, of course, Liverpool and Chelsea, other clubs who've been interested in them, is that it feels like this is now leaning Real Madrid's way. And, of course, what Real Madrid are doing is preparing the financial package necessary to make sure that it gets finalised. Now, I would urge some caution in the sense that we're still 4 or 5 months away from this actually being concluded, but Real Madrid feel that they're in a good position to make this happen.
Sid, are you making sure your dog isn't getting into the shot at the moment? Is that what you're doing?
That's what I'm trying to do, yes. I don't know if I'm succeeding. I don't know if I'm succeeding, because I don't know exactly where the cut-off point is on the footage.
You're doing a grand job. I tell you what, though. Bellingham going to Real Madrid, what an opportunity. I mean, I tip my cap to that boy leaving Birmingham City at 16, going to Dortmund.
Yep.
It's been a great learning curve for him to go there to the Bundesliga. I think he does what he thinks is best for his career and his family and his management company. But listen, I wouldn't be too bullish about it if I was Florentino Perez, bearing in mind he's only just finished wiping the Mbappe custard pie off his face. Now, I'm sure eventually he will get that player, I would imagine. But yeah, I think there are so many other suitors that are in here, particularly Liverpool, and I think there'll be others. But as Sid said, Real Madrid at the moment feel they're in the driving seat, and if they do get him, they're getting a heck of a player.
Do they need him, Luis?
Yeah, very much. And I think that Florentino, I totally agree, is going to try to bring a big player, a player who shined during this World Cup, a player who everybody wants in Europe. Of course, the price tag is quite high for a very young talent, but we've seen what happened also with Enzo Fernandez, who also is linked with some of the biggest teams in Europe. But he's a player who can give so many things to Real Madrid now in transition from a new generation. Modric, Kroos, players who have been given a lot of good moments for Real Madrid and for the Santiago Bernabeu. They're going to start moving on the side. We've seen today Kroos struggling a little bit to keep the pace. Modric arriving just to play a few minutes, even though that they've done an amazing job in today's game. Modric also in the pass to Camavinga. But they need that new fresh blood with Ceballos, with Camavinga, with so many players that are young, they're hungry, and they're going to bring something different. And definitely, Jude Bellingham proved that he can be capable of dealing with Real Madrid, with wearing the jersey of Real Madrid, because that ability, that character, that personality into the game playing for England, I think it's been fantastic. So, yeah, I think that Real Madrid needs a player like him.
Well, as we mentioned, Real Madrid, top of the table off that victory against Valladolid. Barca have the chance to retake top spot as they take on Espanyol on Saturday. Barca, big favourites, as you would imagine. All the talk going into this tie, well, who would Xavi play up front instead of Lewandowski, who was suspended for 3 matches? Well, it looks like Xavi's now going to play Lewandowski up front because Barcelona are appealing, which means that he will be available for this tie and the Atleti tie. What's going on, Sid?
Essentially, Barcelona have been given what's always referred to in Spain as the cautelar. That basically means that pending a final decision, we'll put this suspension on hold. So it goes beyond the league's own committees. It goes to if you like, a kind of an arbitration committee who decide, OK, look, while this case can be kind of fully heard and often, you know, there isn't really anything to hear, but it is a nice way of stalling and buying time, we will put the cautelar in place. In other words, we'll put a cautionary suspension on this suspension. It will be held in place. And that means he can play now. At some point, he will have to fulfill this suspension. He will have to go through the ban. It may well be that ban gets reduced, but it means that he can play now. And to be honest with you, I suspect more importantly, it means, unless things move really quickly during the week, that he'll be able to play next weekend against Atletico Madrid. I don't think, although it's Espanyol who, of course, and quite naturally, are most angry about this, I don't think that Barcelona's decision to fight to get him available now was really about Espanyol tomorrow. I think it was about Atletico Madrid next week.
Sid, this doesn't really make much sense, does it? Because why don't you just appeal everything all the time until you just get a nice run of fixtures?
Well, Dan, you've just hit the nail on the head. That's what clubs do. I mean, they don't always succeed, but of course that's what you do, yeah. You look at the fixtures and you think, this player's suspended, and with the great... In fact, you know what? I'm not even going to name the clubs because I don't want their fans getting upset with me. You've got a couple of rubbish teams coming up and you think, you know what? Let's have him go through this ban now. But if you look at it and you think, my goodness, next up is the Derby, or next up is Atletico Madrid, or next up is Real Madrid, or Sevilla, or someone like that. Maybe not Sevilla right now. You would go, okay, let's go and ask for this to be investigated and looked into properly with the hope of getting the cautelar. Usually, as I say, it's just a way of buying time. And exactly as you say, Dan, that's what clubs do. They appeal things they've got absolutely no right to appeal sometimes. They appeal things they do have a right to appeal. And quite often the timing is done for reasons of convenience rather than for questions of justice.
If this is so obvious, why don't La Liga do something about it?
Well, essentially because in this case, we're talking about, if you like, kind of an external body that decides whether this can be looked into. And of course, a league has to effectively cede ground to those kinds of institutions because there is a disciplinary kind of, what would I call it, proceeding, like a protocol in place that you have to accept. And this is like anything, I suppose. This is like the law in non-sporting terms. A case can be repealed. It can be put on hold. You can ask for the jury to be changed. There's all sorts of ways of buying time to try and put yourself in a better position. There is a lovely phrase in Spanish, which I think works quite well for this, which is echa la ley, echa la trampa, which Luis can translate for you probably better than me, which basically means if there's a law, there's a trap. So if there's a law, there's a loophole. And, you know, the fact of it, the existence of a law means there's bound to be a way around it.
This is naughty from your old team, isn't it, Luis?
A little bit. And I have to say, Sid, that I was trying to, the same sentence I was trying to translate, it, make the law, make the trick, something like that it must be. But definitely, of course, if you can get advantage of that, I think that Barcelona, you say, it's not the first time that it's been done, and I'm sure that it's not going to be the last one. And yeah, they're going to use it for to try to keep Lewandowski, of course. Against Espanyol, that is at the moment a very tough team to beat, but definitely against Atletico Madrid.
Of course, said Spanish is almost as bad as yours, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Well, you couldn't even translate that. There's a lovely translation in England for this as well. It's called nonsense. You know, this seems to me to happen in Spain, to my knowledge, more than certainly any other European country, where you just sit and look at these appeal processes and decisions and you go, how can that be? How can it go out with the jurisdiction of the league to this, to that? And how can it take so long to not be heard, say, Frank, OK, you've got away with it this week in terms of he plays tomorrow morning or Eastern time anyway, plays tomorrow. But within 24 or 48 hours, the decision is then made.
This happened 6-7 weeks ago as well. There was a World Cup in the middle of all of this.
All right, he plays. Lewandowski can just do what he wants tomorrow, right? Do what you want.
Meanwhile, of course, the big news away from La Liga today is that Cristiano Ronaldo is heading to Saudi Arabia. Reports that he's penned a new deal with Al Nassr, which is worth $200 million a year. The biggest contract ever in the sport. Your reaction to this, Craig?
I have to say, not a surprise, but hugely disappointing. I think everything he's done recently has been hugely disappointing, including his performances on the field. But that's maybe what you come to expect more when somebody's about to turn 38 in a month or 6 weeks as he is. But for a guy who apparently has management championed this, Man United don't respect me, Man United should be using me more, Man United manager hasn't got a clue, why am I not playing? To then end up in the, effectively, a backwater of world football, obscurity, is telling you either two things. That one, it was always about the money for him, and he would not cut his losses, he would not go to one of the bigger European clubs and play the Champions League, which he said, I want to leave United. Oh, it's Champions League. It's notoriety. It's success. It's stats. It's been remembered for achieving stuff. Well, you'll not be remembered for anything apart from taking a few gazillion dollars from Saudi Arabia. So yeah, good luck to him. He can go there and pocket as much cash as he wants. But ultimately, he wanted Champions League and he's got football obscurity.
Luis?
Yeah, I'm surprised a little bit. I wasn't expecting Cristiano Ronaldo to make that move. I understand, of course, what is behind. I understand the money is important, much more when you're in the end of your career. I think that he's going to be remembered to one of the best players in the history of football. Ending in a team that maybe no one was expecting him to watch him play. And he's a disappointment. No, I'm not disappointed, but I think that if you want to make a statement, you've always been a personality that tried to show that you've been at the highest level. I remember when he said, to Messi, you have to come here, you have to challenge yourself to the best leagues. If you stay in one league, it's not going to be the same. He's been a character that he's been trying to show that he's been always, or he could be always, the best one. So if he's trying to now make a statement, say, I'm going to be the player who earns the most in the history of football, okay, I think that's fair to say that I think he got that record. But I don't think that it was the right one, at least the way that I see football, the way that I'm not in his position. Of course, very difficult to say, but definitely I was expecting for a player like him to make a different move in favour of football and of the supporters.
Nobody has validated his recent form and tantrums more than the player himself. He has completely validated everything that Erik ten Hag stood for as the new manager in terms of his lack of game time, in terms of not even bringing him off the bench. Then we saw it from Fernando Santos in the World Cup, and you know, we saw sort of the reaction there and what the Portuguese manager thought he needed. And I'm never, ever, ever, ever begrudge anybody if they want to go and take a few quid and finish the career. That's fine. But he has made so much money and still makes so much money from all his social media and the advertisement and everything that goes with it, that, come on, nobody is going to bat an eyelid whether they play and he plays four times a week.
Yeah.
He scores a hat-trick in every game.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to care.
Yeah, that's...
Nobody is going to even bat an eyelid about it. And I thought all this time what he wanted was to finish and be in the limelight.
Yeah.
And he's completely gone in the opposite direction.
Craig's right, isn't he? It doesn't matter what he does there, Sid. You take a look at a pie chart of what we normally talk about on this show over the last year. Messi, Ronaldo, Shepherd's pie. Ronaldo now is pretty much out of that conversation because whatever he does won't resonate.
I love the fact that we're using the Steve Nicol measurement for this, by the way, the shepherd's pie is the way to judge who's the best player in the world right now and how relevant their careers are. I mean, look, obviously, if it's difficult for Steve and for Craig and for Luis to judge this, who've played the game, it's even harder for me. And I certainly wouldn't begrudge any player taking the decision that they want to make. But But admittedly, yeah, from the point of view of the, if you like, the kind of the discourse from Ronaldo and the sense of his own relevance and the sense of his own place in the game, it's a surprising move. That said, I suppose maybe it comes back to that question of who wanted him and at what price, and were there really the options there for him to take an option that he felt would maintain that level of importance, of significance, of relevance within the European game. Maybe there was no one there that kind of made him feel, okay, this is an opportunity for me to demonstrate something, for me to do something. Even if it's, for example, and I really am obviously, you know, kind of, let's put it in my own, if you like, bias terms. As a Real Oviedo fan, for example, I love the idea of Cristiano Ronaldo going to a second division club and bringing them up to the first division and really proving a point that way. I don't believe for a minute that he would have ever wanted to do that. But those kind of challenges clearly have either not been available to him for financial reasons, or he's just not interested in them. And yeah, it does feel like a bit of a pity for it to end this way. Maybe part of the answer here is that this is just a way of making sure it doesn't end at all. Because I guess if the alternatives are just not that attractive, then the alternative becomes, do you just retire? And perhaps he just doesn't want to yet.
Right, there's a couple of ways to look at this from elite level European football. And I'm not suggesting, because I would be hypocritical to what I've just said, that he was capable of doing that still at that level. But certainly in his head, he thought that was the case. Now, either he's gone, his representatives, Jorge Mendes and his colleagues, have gone to the clubs and said, could have said, listen, here's the deal. We'll come in for a pittance. We'll play for a cup price deal, but incentivised by his performances. Right? Now, either they've done that and almost everybody's gone, no thank you. He's a problem. And we don't know if we're going to play him. We don't know if we need him. And even at that, it's not going to be a huge financial outlay. We're not going to do it. Or B, they've gone to all those clubs and went, do you want this guy? It's going to cost you X amount of million. And they've definitely gone, no.
Yeah.
So it has to be one or t'other, because he hasn't just gone there because he doesn't fancy going to one of these clubs and play in Italy and Spain or Germany or England or wherever it is and play elite level. They've either gone round and offered them up to everybody with one of those deals. Either it's he's still pricey and he's still going to cost a lot, or we can do it in an incentivised way. Either way you look at it, nobody's taking him.
Plenty of content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to check it out over on ESPN FC.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
At Anfield, Liverpool beat Leicester City by 2-1, but goodness me, they were made to work hard for the victory. Dewsbury Hall would score for the visitors after just 4 minutes, and then two really strange own goals from Fyce would see Liverpool take a 2-1 lead. They would hold on to it and take all 3 points. That means now they're 1 point adrift of Manchester United in fifth, two off Spurs, who sit in fourth. Well, Luis Garcia is with us, Stevie Nicol as well. Stevie, another tough watch for a Liverpool fan.
Oh, it was hard work. Well, it was hard work on the field and hard work off it, actually sitting watching it. You know, horrible defender. Listen, you can say it's good football from Leicester and a good finish from Dewsbury Hall, but defensively it's an absolute disaster. An absolute cavernous hole in the middle and the back. Van Dijk basically ball watching, because if he's watching what's going on around him, then he sees that Dewsbury Hall is coming late and should have stepped off. But from there on, yes, you can say Liverpool were after Leicester, but not in a lot of style. A lot of huff and a lot of puff. Nunez, for me, no question, was the thorn again for Leicester. Yes, he didn't finish, but he was the man. When there was ever anything going on for Liverpool going forward, he was right in the middle of it. I thought he was unlucky with his chip that came off the post. I thought he did show composure there to actually dink it over the goalie. But he needn't have worried, because Mr. Fass was there to finish it off. As far as the first one that Fass puts in, he absolutely deserves all he gets. Listen, it's an absolutely horrendous piece of defending from a guy in the Premier... And a Premier League player... Completely, no, you talk about Nunez not having composure in front of goal. Well, defenders have to have the same, the other way around. And this is absolutely horrendous. A wild swipe, comes off his shin or his shin pad, up and over the goalie and back under the crossbar. Listen, when you defend like that, you deserve all you get. So, Liverpool win. They won against Villa. Nothing to write home about, but you know what? It's 6 points, another three against Leicester. It's 6 points from the two games, and that's the only thing that really matters right now. But you got to think eventually they're going to have to start putting some sort of performance together, or even 10 or 15 minutes control of a game with some nice passing and control and in movement, because it's just not happening right now.
Is that harsh for that first goal, Luis?
Yes, a little bit, yes. They were exposed. I think the first few minutes they were not into the game. I think their approach was a little bit soft. You can see that Van Dijk was complaining about the line going forward with him, but they don't know what he's going to do. It doesn't matter, because the player got in through him very easily. If the players on the line, they were at the same height, it was no difference of what happened right after. And it's true that not only that occasion, second half, in a couple of times also, there was a few gaps in between Matip and Van Dijk, also another one between Matip and Alexander. I know that today, I was mentioning before, he did also a very good job in that right side. I think was solid going forward and also in defence. And about Darwin, let me say that I like it. I enjoy watching him play today. Of course, everybody is asking for the finish, the end product. That's why Gakpo is arriving to Liverpool to show that, to bring that to the game, to add more goals from the midfield going forward. But today was unlucky because of the balls that chance goes forward, but also put a very good ball through the lines that no one saw to allow Salah get into the box to go 1v1 with the keeper. That he didn't finish and no one said anything about it. So I think it was a good game. And it's about, at the moment, it's about getting points. We cannot complain about if they are well or not. Sometimes you need this kind of luck to get 3 points and make this momentum. Liverpool needs a momentum to try to get into the top four.
Don't forget, Wout Vaz had another one in the second half that wasn't an on-goal-esque. It was just
kind of kicked it up in the end.
Sorry, not under any pressure with a ball over his shoulder. He had a little bit of pressure, but Liverpool player was 3 or 4 yards off him and he scuffed it back towards his goalkeeper and it let Nunez in. I mean, his confidence is shot. It was all a bit of a mess. But going back to two things. One, Leicester were demolished at home just a few days ago by Newcastle.
Yes.
So Newcastle made much easier work than Liverpool did, even though he made some changes because of that. And then the Liverpool goal, that goal from the Danny Ward kick, from his feet, from inside or around his own penalty box or inside his 6-yard box. Once Trent Alexander-Arnold pushes on, and they've pushed everybody on, and Matip's almost in the right back position, and Henderson's trying to drop in and Van Dijk's trying to shuffle across a little bit, as Stevie said, he's ball watching. Then Andy Robertson as well, he has to tuck in. He's got to come round. I mean, if he switches it over the other side of Robertson, they can get across. But he's almost 10 yards further forward than Van Dijk as well. So it was so lopsided. And I saw a start from somebody saying in 2022, I think Liverpool were either the top or joint top at losing goals in the first 5 minutes of games.
Right.
So it's clearly they've not really been switching on. And the two games they've played, Villa, who I know Stevie and I talked about this game, who apart from their finishing, played quite well, but they were abysmal in front of goal, Villa that was. And then Leicester today, final third again, if they were better, maybe Liverpool, yeah, it would have cost them. So yeah, they're in a decent position to challenge for the top four, but I wouldn't say they're playing great.
After scoring two own goals, Stevie, as a coach at half time, would you be tempted to have taken Fice off?
No, absolutely not. That's the last thing I would do. Absolutely the last thing I'd do. He's a guy that's right now probably one of the first names on the team sheet with the injuries they have, particularly defensively. So, you know, you're putting your arm around him saying, look, hey, it's the way it goes. Let's show us what you're made of. And that's not easy to do. He did. You could see that he was a little hesitant. I'll be nice. In the second half as well, there was a couple of things that he just didn't make good decisions on. But the last thing you do in a situation like that is take the player off. You've got to let him play his way through it and play his way out of it. And I think to a certain extent he did that. He didn't collapse, but like most people, he was feeling a little bit of pressure after that.
And then how many days have to go by before you buy him a Liverpool shirt, Stevie?
I would suggest the next time they're in training, somebody gets a replica ball and gives it to them and say, one more and you could have had this. Something like that. It'll just take the air out of them. I asked my son at half time, I said, if he scores another one, do they give him the ball? I don't think it's ever happened before.
But I keep walking. Can you imagine he walked in the Leicester away dressing room with the ball scoring a hat trick? All right, lads.
You'll sign this for me, boys.
He signed this for me, lads.
Yeah, I just said that. Okay. Let's talk about Gakpo, who is in attendance. Do you like this signing, Luis? And where do you think he's best suited to play in this Liverpool side?
Well, I guess we all focus that people is talking about if he's more midfielder going forward, second striker, that kind of role, similar of what Firmino does as a number nine. He's a player who got a very good finishing. He's very young, still a lot to work on him. I think he physically is strong as well. We need to see if mentally he's going to be... He's going to manage well what it is to wear the jersey of Liverpool, the crowd, the pressure. We've seen what happened previously with centre forwards who couldn't handle that kind of pressure. I think he's young, he's bold. We've seen him at the highest stage in the World Cup shine. So I expect a lot of very good things from him. Players around him, I'm sure that they're going to help him. But I think the main position for him is going to be that role in the centre, allowing him to move freely, but yet trying to have a play into the box.
Meanwhile, next week is all about the third round of the FA Cup, some cracking ties, including Manchester United against Everton, then Spurs, Pompey, Coventry City, Wrexham, Sheffield Wednesday, Newcastle, Liverpool, Wolves. All of these games live on ESPN+. Then on the 8th of Sunday, it's big game, City take on Chelsea. And on Monday, an interesting clash between Oxford and Arsenal. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We've seen some incredible tributes to Pelé, haven't we, over the last 24 hours since his passing. The front page of the Spanish newspaper AS saying the king, Annie Leibovitz's picture, the photo of Pelé's feet, very much prominent on the front page. Pelé's death, of course, front page news right across the globe. Just a selection of newspapers here paying tribute to the man who won the World Cup on no less than three occasions. This is what Pep Guardiola had to say.
Well, I think on behalf of Manchester City, our biggest condolence for his family and friends. And football is football. Thanks for this type of people, play as human beings. So I think Neymar said a great sentence that before number 10, it was just a number. And after him, it was became something like something special. Every player, a top player, want to wear the number 10 in own team. So well, what he has done for football is, you know, it's there and always will remain.
Stevie, your memories of Pelé?
Oh, my goodness. Lots of different ones. I mean, clearly, 1970, watching the World Cup, was the first time I'd ever seen him, ever heard of him. First time I'd seen Emery try and score from the halfway line. Of course, back then you could hardly kick the ball far enough. First time I'd seen somebody try to dummy the goalkeeper, jump over the ball, run past the goalie, run back round the other side of the goalie, and then try and score from an incredible angle. I mean, just all kinds of stuff that you had never seen before he was doing every time he came on the TV. Every time they played a game and moved forward to the next one, there would be something else to talk about that this one guy was doing. Obviously, the header from the Gordon Banks save. I heard Pelé saying the other day, he said, you know, I've scored over 1,000 goals, and whenever I meet anybody, he says, they always talk about the save from Gordon Banks, which is really amazing when you think about it. But to score that amount of goals, oh my goodness. I think you can safely say that Mr. Pelé had a little bit of composure in front of goal. Yeah, what a player. Just always looked as though he was playing in the schoolyard. Always looked as though it was just his mates he was playing with, not full-blooded pros, shall we say. Yeah, that's the biggest thing. He looked as though he was just playing in the schoolyard every time he stepped on the field.
Luis?
Yeah, for me it was about what my dad told me about him, what some videos that we could watch, that famous movie he played next to Ardiles and Sylvester Stallone. But definitely for me it's the legacy he just left. I think he's one of the, he will be remembered as one of the biggest sportsmen in the history of the sport, one of the best football players. People will agree or not if he's better than Maradona or Messi or whatever, but at the end, it's about his legacy. And he created that Jogo Bonito. He was ahead of his generation. He was ahead of his time. All those plays that we've seen, the footage we've seen from him, we can see them today. That goal that was never a goal, that dummy allowing the ball to go through past the keeper around it and trying to score that. He never scored, but everybody remember that kind of plays. I think that's the legacy that Pelé is going to leave to the next generation, and will be remembered as one of the best one, if not the best one.
Sid, we've seen tributes, of course, all around the world. Spain, no exception.
No, absolutely. And of course, in Spain, just as everywhere else, there's a sense of Pelé's place as the original all-time best player. Now, of course, over the years, there are other contenders that emerge, Maradona being the most obvious of them. And then the eternal debate in recent years with players like Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, of course. But with Spain, the only other player that was ever really in that list was Alfredo Di Stefano. There's no doubt that Pelé was seen as kind of the outstanding player, not just of his generation, but of any generation. And actually, you know, it's interesting to kind of go back and talk about those moments that both Steve and Luis were talking about, that the standout moments from 1970 are a shot from the halfway line that doesn't go in, the dummy of the goalkeeper that doesn't go in, and a header that doesn't go in. And I think that helps to give us a sense of the enormity of what Pelé did and the legacy that he did, that in a way, those moments were kind of so iconic and so different, and so kind of, he was so capable of breaking the mold that it almost didn't matter that those three moments were not successful. And that's in the case of Pelé, who of course is in World Cup terms at least the most successful footballer there's ever been in terms of the number of goals, the most successful goal scorer there's ever been. And yet his three iconic artistic moments are almost more artistic for the fact that they didn't even lead to a goal. That there was something aesthetic there that mattered even when it didn't end up with the ball in the back of the net.
It's somewhat ironic now after his passing that we've just come off the back of a World Cup and that Messi has finally achieved his goal. As I'd mentioned, he, Pelé, won three of them. But for this eternal discussion that everyone seems to have, herself included, about who was the greatest and who is the greatest, and of course it's subjective and nobody can ever have a definitive answer. Now when we're seeing these videos after Pelé's death, many of us will have seen clips of, as Stevie said, the Gordon Banks save, and there's been other moments, but there have been so many videos coming out for most of us who didn't see him play live, and I think a lot of people will be even surprised to sit back and go, wow, you look at the game back then, you look at the pitches, the equipment, the stadiums, the fitness levels, everything that that guy was doing was so far ahead of his time. It's what effectively Lionel Messi and others have been doing and have been trying to do in the modern game. And I think if there ever is a case to say, stop with this comparison, because it is so difficult comparing eras when you see what that man did for club and country, when you see the old film, when you see what he was able to achieve on the football field, it really is a joy to watch. And yeah, I mean, such a sad time, but what that guy did for Brazil, and I keep hearing now, if you're talking about a player that'll never be forgotten, it has to be. If you're talking about one guy in this sport that people will never forget what he did or what he achieved, it is Pelé.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. As Craig says, there will never be another Pelé, who passed away this week at the age of 82, the only man ever to win three World Cups.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Action in the Championship on Friday. Some tight games. Hull City with that 1-0 victory away against Birmingham. Norwich held at home against Reading. Burnley, meanwhile, continue their fine start to the season with a 1-0 victory over Stoke. And Swansea thrashed Watford by 4-0. Taking a look at what that means then in the table. Burnley 3 points clear of Sheffield United in second. Those two teams miles ahead, aren't they, of the chasing pack. The action then continues this weekend on New Year's Day. Blackburn taking on Cardiff City, followed by Blackpool against Sunderland. Both of those games back-to-back on ESPN+. We mentioned some of the Argentinian players are back. Not Lionel Messi. There's this with his wife and parents celebrating winning the World Cup. Angel Di Maria with him as well. You'd be in absolutely no rush, would you?
No.
To head back to France?
To be honest, he doesn't look as if he is.
No, exactly.
Sending pictures to Mbappe.
Yeah.
Anyway, make sure you keep the league run going.
Meanwhile, Neymar's getting sent off. Oh, he's in there.
He's cutting a cake and drinking beer.
Yep. Extra time is next. Stay tuned. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you for your tweets. Craig Burley is with us. Sid Lowe and Luis Garcia joins us as well. Not Luis Suarez. What?
Sid's dog.
Well, and Sid's dog is here as well. I'm sorry for calling you Luis Suarez during the show, Luis. How's the dog? You can let the dog in now. It's extra time. All bets are off, Sid.
Yeah, she's actually asleep, so I'm hoping she's not going to hit her.
Oh, okay. All right.
Was there a reason, Sid, that she wouldn't lie down, let in another room, or is she so attached to you?
Yeah, that's basically it. She just won't. Particularly, I'm home alone at the moment, so obviously, if you're trying to rob the house, know that you'll get a paint can in your head. But
Home Alone style. I like it.
Yeah.
Sid, we haven't seen you since the World Cup. How was it for you?
Incredible. I mean, genuinely, obviously incredible. It was extremely tiring. It felt very, very long. But to have that kind of ending was just extraordinary.
Yeah, you look tired, Sid.
I do now, or I did then.
You look tired now, Luis. Yeah. Meanwhile, you're in Colombia, and if you follow Luis on Instagram, you can see all the adventures he's been up to, whitewater rafting, all that sort of stuff. What a life, Luis.
Well, I have to say that I'm enjoying Colombia. Yeah, it's totally true. Pamis is from here, so we decided to spend Christmas with her family here. And there's a lot of nature, beautiful nature, and we try to squeeze it, doing these kind of real things and eating sancocho and all this kind of stuff from here. So yeah, enjoy.
Yeah, same decorator look as Ian Dark as well.
I bet the food's lovely down there. Stevie Nicol would love it, wouldn't he?
Imagine, Steve, what's this?
Lovely little Colombian cuisine.
All right, Luis, let's talk about Gakpo, shall we? How big an impact we expect him to make for the remainder of the season, over or under 15 goals and assists?
I would love to go over, but I'm not sure if he's going to make that impact. It's not going to be easy to replace Firmino, to replace Darwin Nunes in that position. To get into the 11 is not going to be easy, even though that Jürgen knows that he has to give it and start it very slow. Premier League is very tough, it's complicated. Liverpool today, they won just 2-1. But you could see they struggled for some moments with a few problems in defense. So it could be a Fernando Torres situation or Andy Carroll situation. I hope that he goes in the direction of Fernando Torres and make a massive impact in the first year, or at least the first few months, and get that confidence, get the crowds back. But it's not going to be easy. And I think he's not that kind of player that we all expect that he's going to score 25, 30 goals a season. Hopefully, yes. But that's the way I see it at the moment. Hopefully he proved me wrong and he scored over 15 goals in the rest of the season.
That's ambitious, isn't it?
15 goals and assists, not really.
What, in half a season?
Yeah. Thanks, all right.
Hold on. 15 goals and an assist in just over half a season?
Yeah.
For a guy who's not a striker?
I think you can get the assists in there, can't you?
Oh, 15 goals and assists?
Yes. What do you think it was? 15 goals and an assist?
No, 15 goals.
Right. And what do you think I said assists for?
I didn't. I wasn't listening. The answer's no. Good player, though.
Right, OK.
37.
I want to give you question four. We won't address it now, but just so you can think while others are talking. Thank you. Woof. What was the most entertaining own goal you saw in your career? Think about that as we go to the next question, which is, Craig, do you think Haaland's goal output will go down once every team has played him and will maybe have a better game plan to go against him?
No, not particularly, no. Nope. Not because he's playing in such a talented side with people around him that are just going to, you know, Gundogan, brilliant passer, De Bruyne, Mahrez, Foden, the list goes on.
They're right.
Only, you know, Julian Alvarez is back, I believe. The youngster is showing up.
Yes, the Argentinians are coming back, aren't they?
I don't really think so. I think he's only going to get better.
Right.
Fitter, stronger. More experience working under that coach with that team, so I don't see it changing, to be honest.
Luis, have you ever experienced a game where the same player scored two own goals?
No, never seen. I was going to mention that you called about the funny own goals. I recall a couple at least from Jamie Carragher. I think he's got a pretty decent record on that, but no, I cannot recall two own goals on a game, and I think must be very difficult, frustrating, and for that player, devastating. So difficult to continue playing. I think today did a good effort in the second half, but never seen that before.
Yeah, Carragher scored twice, didn't he? Two own goals in the game against Manchester United back
in the
day. Well,
the good thing is there's not a big rivalry there, so...
Well, yes, exactly.
If you're going to do it, I mean, do it against, I don't know.
Sid, you watch a lot and lot of football. Have you seen this before?
Two in the same game from the same player? I don't think I have. I'm really struggling to think of anything quite like that. No, I don't think so.
No.
How many goals have you scored in your life?
Who, me?
Not you, I'm talking to Craig.
I was going to say, why would you want to know how many I'd scored?
Well, coming on this show with an own goal at the start.
Exactly.
That's an own goal.
Yeah, invite me to your wedding, that was an own goal.
Yeah, that really was, wow.
One.
That was at Anfield?
That was at Anfield, yeah.
Talk us through it.
at the Kop end. Before Luis was there, obviously.
Right. Suarez or Garcia?
Both. It was across to the back post. And I was sandwiched in between John Barnes, I think, and Robbie Fowler.
Right.
Might be wrong. And I tried to head it out for a corner kick.
Okay.
So I came back from the midfield to...
Yeah, interfering.
What I should have done, I should have just did what people do now. I should have just stood outside the box.
Right.
And left everybody else. I came back in. I tried to head it out for a corner and I got a little bit too much of the forehead on it. And it went into the top corner.
Big target.
It was a big target.
Luis, how many own goals have you got on your record?
I wasn't close enough to my own goal, so never scored a goal.
Right, let's go to the question which I'd set you up for. What was the most entertaining own goal you saw?
That one.
Your own goal? Yeah.
I don't know, it's hard to remember now.
Yes, yeah. Sid, you have a good memory for these things.
Oh, the best own goal. Ridiculous. Obviously, this isn't memory. This is from having watched it on videos. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I've got a feeling that the goal that the Koreans score at Goodison Park in the 66 World Cup is a fantastic own goal diving header.
Wow.
Good, I have to go back and check that, but I believe so.
Oh, well, there you go.
Now, there's been some peaches over the years. I just can't remember.
Yeah.
I saw Lee Dixon do one for Arsenal once at Highbury. I wasn't there, but I was on tape when he chipped it over the goalkeeper. There's so many from outside the box.
Yeah. Stevie's got a couple, hasn't he? I seem to remember. Luis?
I think that it was Sid is going to remember it. Probably he's going to help me with the name. I think it was Pasic, the center back from Romania playing for Real Madrid. He scored a fantastic header own goal against Barcelona at El Clásico. And I remember not long ago I saw an interview from him and they were showing that goal. It was a header into the box. And he just arriving almost from a penalty spot and headed into his own net. And it was funny for the Barcelona supporters, but not very much for him and the Real Madrid fans.
And Jonathan Woodgate, you remember Sid as well, obviously, had a torrid time with injuries, made his debut and scored an own goal and then got sent off. Didn't he? Do I remember that right?
Yeah, absolutely right. And it was the most brilliant post-match interview I've ever heard. Let's just say that words that rhyme with luck were said quite often. And he kind of finished this post-match interview saying, you know, I'd score this own goal. I got myself booked. I was just saying to myself, just don't get another yellow card. Just don't get another yellow card. And then I got this other yellow card. And you know, as I say, he had repeated some very rude words a very large number of times, and it actually got to the point that the little gathering of British journalists that were there for him to talk to him post game had to end up saying, Jonathan, would you mind saying that all again, but just like without the curse words in it.
Was you not there then?
I was there, yeah.
And you couldn't remember?
What do you mean I couldn't remember? I just set it all up.
Oh, but I thought you were struggling to remember.
No, I wasn't struggling. I think it was against Rosenberg maybe in the Champions League.
Rosenberg?
No, I think it was against was it not against Athletic Club?
Probably said thanks. You could just let me get away with that, but I think you might be right.
I could have done, couldn't I? But you've been getting away with it for too many
years.
Don't worry,
Sid.
And it was about time someone called you up on it.
Oh, man.
Your time at Real Madrid was just spent in an Irish bar, wasn't it? Really?
How dare you? How dare you, Craig?
Your whole time there, instead of engulfing yourself in the culture of Spain and the tapas and the food and the wine, you spent 99% of your time on the top of a table singing karaoke in an Irish bar.
Larry's, it was called.
The lack of a response.
Larry's, it was called, yes. God. No wonder Larry retired and moved to South America. The amount of money we gave him. Right, for all, after seeing the first Winter World Cup, would you prefer to keep the World Cup in the summer after players are already physically tired, or mid-season in the winter when players are better physically? What do you think, Luis?
To be honest, I didn't see much difference during the game. I've seen players very tired, I've seen injuries, I've seen the end of some of the games with people just having cramps. So I think that it wasn't much difference on physicality. I think that all the World Cups that I remember, it was kind of similar. This season is because we were more focused on, let's see, this season, this World Cup, we were more focused on, let's see, and trying to find the ways this World Cup is going to be different. But I think it was exciting from the first game to the last one. with better and worse games, but the same like during the summer. And players, I think they look fantastic. And I've seen World Cups with the player look fantastic. So I didn't see much difference on that recall.
What would you prefer as a player?
Well, I don't know. I never played in the Winter World Cup.
Yes, but you can imagine it.
Do you know, I don't think I would have minded it because I didn't like all the flaffing around leading up.
Right.
You know, friendlies, getting on a plane, travelling. We travelled twice for Euro 96 and France 98 to the US here. We had a good time.
Right.
if you know what I mean.
Well, I think we do, Craig Burley, yes. Having a go at my Madrid ways, you're a professional player.
You're just waiting and waiting. So in some sense, the lack of sort of time was, I think, a good thing. Because you just literally, you're preparing, the season finishes, you have a week or 10 days, whatever it is, boss, you're in, whereas maybe you've got 3 or 4 weeks, depending on when your season finishes. So yeah, I quite liked it from that point of view, but I'm a bit of a traditionalist that I like to have it in the summer. But I wouldn't mind if they had it again and everybody was agreed with it.
Right.
In a proper place and they could schedule it in the winter again. I thought it was quite fun to split the season, watch a World Cup and then continue the season again.
Yeah.
From a non-participating person.
Sid, you were a non-participating person.
Well, I mean, the first thing to say is that question was extraordinarily loaded, wasn't it? That question might as well have said, are you going to give me the right answer or the wrong answer? I sort of agree with Luis in that I don't know really if the evidence is actually there that it was better. Because, and if it was better, that it was any better because of the physical condition. I, as a non-participant, would argue that the best games are the games when the players are absolutely exhausted. Extra time is better than 90 minutes, partly because the players can't cover the pitch because there's loads of space. So I like the idea of the players being exhausted. I think there's another question as well, which is not just about how do the players perform during the World Cup, but what does it do to the domestic season? You know, this sort of slight sense that some players were holding back until now, that we don't know how players will react as they go back into the season. And from a non-participating point of view, and just kind of a fan's one, I don't know about you, but I found it a bit weird to go straight back into football without feeling like we can kind of sit and digest the World Cup and have it as the focal point of the year, which is what it should be. And it feels like we're going, right, that's done. Let's get on to the other stuff. And you think, well, no, it's the World Cup. We should be, you know, we should be lingering on this for a long time. We shouldn't. It feels to me a little bit premature to be going straight back into football again. So I would prefer it to be in the summer, personally.
Oh, let me tell you, nobody lingers on things better than us, Sid.
That is true.
We love a linger.
We can linger on any story that for weeks, months, maybe even years.
That is it. Thank you very much, guys. Luis, enjoy the rest of your holiday. Sid, enjoy your time home alone. We'll be back tomorrow. Talking to the dog, setting up traps outside. We will be back.
With a paint can. Oh, that's right.
I don't think he does that in the film.